Okay. We're going to talk about the C's this week. This whole sermon series, I think, will be kind of an alliteration on C's. So last week I talked about the core of marriage. And again, we had that image of the vacuum cleaners. And initially when you're in relationships, it's about what you receive out of that relationship and how much you can derive from that person. And then as you move into marriage, specifically Christian marriage, we then assume that you're trying to give yourself away to this person. You're sacrificing and you're submitting and you're serving this person. And this kind of is where then marriage flows towards. We started this whole thing, though, with Matthew 22, when Jesus is asked what the greatest commandment is, to love your neighbor, to love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment. And the second is like it, love your neighbor as yourself. All the law and the prophets hang on these two commands. We'll talk about marriage, spouse in February. We're going to talk about loving our children. April, we'll talk about loving our friends, neighbors, and enemy. I just started reading on some stuff on this, too. I got some real interesting things that I've been listening to and reading and engaging. I'm already looking forward to this. Like, this, the marriage series in my mind is already just kind of like, all right, we're done with that. Let's move on. But we'll talk about children in the next month. And even down here, friends and neighbors and enemies, some good stuff coming up. So, Keller, we started with this. I think this is such an important observation about marriage. And for those, was anybody not here last week? Okay, good. I was gonna reference Keller's book again, but since we all had a chance to see that last week, Keller in his book, he says that he talks about marriage, and just I'll paraphrase this, but he says how powerful marriage is in our life. And he says that if our marriage is strong, right, even if everything around us is weak, even if everything around us is weak and has trouble, it doesn't matter. We move out into the world in strength. If our marriage is weak, even if all the circumstances in our life are successful and strong, if that doesn't matter, you move out into the world in weakness. It has incredible power because it's instituted by God. And it has to have this unequaled supreme priority in our lives. We got to give it that unequal supreme priority. So this week, again, last week as we talked about the core of marriage, this week what I want to talk about is I want to talk about conflict. I want to talk about communication. I want to talk about choices. And I want to talk about change. And again, I don't even know if I'm going to get to the last two. We'll see how long these first two take us. But we're going to talk about conflict and communication because those two are so closely linked together. So here's what I want to do. And you're going to just kind of open up and you're going to share of a conflict that you've had with your spouse. And it could be something silly. It could, like, try and keep it light. Don't say, you know, this isn't your group therapy time. And just say, hey, this is, you know, maybe something that's a recurring conflict or something that happens occasionally, or, you know, or if that's kind of uncomfortable, you could talk about one with a coworker or a friend or a family member. So turn to a person next to you. Mark, I'll come sit next to you because you're all by yourself. We'll talk about our spouses. And then just share of a little conflict that you might have with your spouse. All right. Take a minute. I shared with you mine this morning.
Yeah, you're done. My big conflict that I actually have too is that I don't give her enough time to call her mom when she gets home.
Mm-hmm.
But you go back before Dad hurt himself. And it was...
I got this little conflict that I want to talk about. I think it's just going to work right like this. Let's hope so. Anybody have this conflict?
Yes.
Anybody have this conflict right here? Come on.
You can't get off the toilet because you already did your business. You got no other option but to make that work.
Uh-huh.
Women use far more toilet paper.
Oh, yeah.
So it should be their responsibility. When I had our when Alice was born, and I started calculating the amount of toilet paper that my house is going to use, I'm going to start driving Uber just to be able to cover my toilet paper costs. So here's how I've been thinking about this. So let's put that here. I think I need a little notepad. What happens is when we have a conflict, so we got this conflict here, right? We've all had this conflict. And then what happens with this conflict, put this here. Okay, that's about as good as it's going to get. In my mind, it was going to take up the whole wall, so I might have to figure out. What happens is when we have conflict, right, is where we often fight is we fight, I would say, back here in the shadows. You guys know what I'm talking about? So we never typically will address this issue right here, right, is we fight somewhere back in the shadows. And when this doesn't get replaced, right, then our spouse is what? Give me some words that we use. Let me just give you one here. Right? They're lazy. What else happens when they don't replace the toilet paper? Inconsiderate. S-I-D-E-R-A-T-E? What else? They're selfish, good. Now, 2 for 2. Come on, somebody better step up. I was thinking of, the one that I was thinking of is oblivious. What else? What other words did I come up with? Ooh, undisciplined. Right? If you can read any of those things. What happens, I notice, is when you have conflict with your spouse, is you do a lot of your fighting, a lot of your arguing, all the way back here in the shadows. Typically, this is what happens back here. You don't necessarily address the conflict itself, right? As a pastor, I do a lot of weddings. And you guys notice, like, kind of back here is where all the character assassinations happen, right? Like, you didn't replace the toilet paper roll, so now all of a sudden this is who you are, so to speak. You know what I'm talking about? So what I've noticed as a pastor, when I do wedding ceremonies, one of the things I like to do with wedding ceremonies, I like to ask people who I marry, Molly and Ronnie, I did this for you guys, I say, what do you guys love about each other? Come up with like 5 things that you love about each other, right? And then I share those things in the ceremony. I say, Ronnie loves Molly because of these 5 things. Molly loves Ronnie because of these 5 things. And in the wedding ceremonies that I've done, I have yet to do a wedding ceremony where they've said, you know what I really love about my spouse? They are so undisciplined. They are incredibly lazy. They are so inconsiderate. I love that about them. They're selfish and they're oblivious. That's what I love about you, honey, right? But when we fight, when you conflict, right? We run from these people, right? Like nobody stands, we're not like, oh man, I can't wait to marry this sort of a person, right? We run from these people. But what happens is in the moment of conflict, we end up doing all of our battling back here in the shadows, right? Instead of dealing with the conflict. And this is who they become. They become this kind of character cartoon version of themselves, in which they're again undisciplined and lazy and inconsiderate and oblivious, right? And this is what the way I always see conflict is there's the conflict, right? There's the issue, and then there's the shadow. And often too much fighting is often done back here in the shadows. So my first rule of conflict is this, and this is I think something good for you to kind of to keep, is I would say keep the issue, don't put the entire relationship on the line, right? And not that, you know, with a toilet paper, the entire relationship goes on the line, but their entire reputation goes on the line, doesn't it, right? Don't put the entire relationship, don't put their reputation on the line. I've learned this in a couple different avenues in my life. This was something that my mentor kind of pointed out to me a while ago. And so you might want to say, hey, honey, can we talk about the toilet paper roll? Right? Instead of you never replace it. You're always so, I like that word, Matt, inconsiderate. You know what I mean? And what happens is you use another kind of little bonus here. I'll just do, oops. This always never. Don't use those superlatives, right? All those superlatives do is they're to manipulate, and they just sow seeds of guilt and shame in people, right? So don't say you're always so considerate. You never replace the toilet paper. Just stay away from those, right? Keep the issue, and just deal with it. Can we talk about this? Can we see what's going on here? Now, the second thing I want to say about this is, here's what's interesting, is that you need to be patient, right? You have this conflict, and you need to be patient knowing that this might not resolve the first time, or the 10th time, or the 50th time. Sometimes it just takes time, right? For me, and I shared last week, I thought about bringing a dresser drawer, because that was my thing last week, right? Is I just needed to close my dresser drawer, and it just took me a while for me to see that. How long have we had that dresser now? A year? Maybe a little less than a year. It just took me a while for me to see that I need to close my dresser drawers. Do you know what I mean? And so you keep the issue, you deal with the issue. Don't do your battles back here in the shadows, right? Stay away from these superlatives of always and never, right? Just begin with dealing with the issues. Now that's the first rule. The second rule is this. I would say that you need to initiate movement towards their position. Okay, so you need to initiate movement towards their position. Jesus uses this really this beautiful imagery in Matthew when he talks about judging. And I want to read this. And part of it's out of the Message, and part of it's out of the Good Word translation. But let me read this. And this is a passage that you're probably all familiar with. But let's read it, and then we're going to discuss how this works. So Jesus says this. This is Eugene Peterson's translation. He says, "Don't pick on people. Jump on their failures, criticize their faults, unless, of course, you want the same treatment. That critical spirit has a way of boomeranging," right? We're familiar with the words, don't judge or you'll be judged, right? The same measure you use towards other people will be used towards you. Peterson translates and he says, don't pick on people, jump on their failures, criticize their faults, unless, of course, you want the same treatment. That critical spirit has a way of boomeranging. And then the second part of this, out of a different translation, he says, so why do you see the piece of sawdust in another believer's eye and not notice the wooden beam in your own eye? How can you say to another believer, and you could just fill in spouse there if you wanted, let me take the piece of sawdust out of your eye when you have a beam in your own eye? You hypocrite. First remove the beam from your own eye, then you will see clearly to remove the piece of sawdust from another believer's eye. Now, I've always, when I think about this verse, I've always imagined, I think I might have even shared this one time before, but I always imagine that the wood isn't like this, right? That the wood, does anybody see it like this? The plank going this way, the wooden beam? You know what I'm talking about, right? If you were to close your eyes and think of a beam in your eye, a wooden beam in your eye, is it going this way? Or is it going this way? Straight out. Are you with me on that? This is the way I always see it. So what I see with this when Jesus shares this is what happens is when we're critical, as Peterson says, right? Peterson says, when you're critical, when you jump on people's failures, when you pick on them, right? When you're judgmental towards them, what happens with this is you are unable, now watch this, I'm going to use this. Okay, I am unable, watch out, babe, to actually move close to my wife, right? To my spouse. Because why? I'm distant and detached and just judging them, right? So what Jesus is saying is he's saying that you have to begin to do the interior work first, right? You have to begin to say, okay, where am I being critical? Where am I being judgmental? Where am I picking on them? Maybe I'm being harsh. Maybe I'm being, maybe I'm just jumping on their failures, right? And you have to begin to do that interior work first before, look, Jesus doesn't say, just take the beam out of your eye and that's all you need to do. Jesus instructs us at the very end. He says, then you can see clearly to remove the sawdust from another believer's eye. The point isn't that just I remove this judgmental spirit in my heart, but the point is that not only would I remove that judgmental, critical, jumping on people's faults spirit in my heart, but then I would actually move towards that person and be able to help them. Isn't this what you want in conflict? That two people would come together, they would initiate movement towards one another, that they could help one another grow. That this person is doing interior work, not to be critical and not to be judgmental and not to jump on people's failures and faults. This person's doing the interior work, that the husband and the wife can come together and work on something together. Isn't that what you want in your marriage? Are you with me on that? Right? Do you just want to say, you know, you're always so lazy, you're always so undisciplined, you're so oblivious, right? And we just keep this distance in my mind that should have been like 16 feet, right? We just keep this distance and we never actually are able to engage our spouse, right? Because all we're doing is we're just judging them from a distance, right? I can never get close to my spouse if I'm just being critical of them, if I'm just judging them, if I'm just picking on them, if I'm just observing their faults and saying, well, it's you, it's that, it's this, it's all these things, right? This is, again, this is the shadow battles that we do, okay? So the first thing I would say is to do the interior work. I mean, to keep the issue. Let's talk about the toilet paper, right? The second thing is to initiate, I would say, movement towards their position. Okay, why is this thing happening? What's going on? Why is my wife frustrated at this? Why doesn't my husband replace the toilet paper? And you kind of begin to move towards one another to get a good idea. And then the third thing I would say is to engage in their viewpoint. You try to figure out what's motivating the other person, right? You try to figure out what's going on in their heart and in their mind. Conflicts, listen to this, conflicts are almost never about getting the facts right. Conflicts are almost never about getting the facts right. They're about people's perceptions of those facts. Okay? They're about people's perceptions of those facts. I'll share a story. When we lived in our condo, and it was specifically when it was just the two of us and the house was, we would keep the house always clean, right? It was just no problem. It was just, now it's a battle every single day to, my wife, sometimes in the morning, on the weekends, you'd clean the kitchen, and she'd do this immaculate job cleaning the kitchen. Sink's cleaned, stove is cleaned, countertops wiped down, everything's clean. And I'd go to get something out of the fridge, and I would notice on top of the fridge that there's all this dust and dirt and debris. Are you with me on that, Dustin?
Oh yeah.
Is this a roll of toilet paper in your house right now?
No.
Okay. Now, I, for years, would silently kind of harbor resentment for that. I would think to myself, she cleans the whole kitchen and leaves the top of the refrigerator undone? What's wrong with her? You know what I mean? And literally for years, I was like, okay, well, I'll just clean it up. It's my own. It's just, she doesn't. And literally one time I walked to the refrigerator and I said, did I tell the story before? Maybe I didn't. I wonder how tall my wife is. And I did this. And I realized that my wife couldn't see on top of the refrigerator, right? And that changed it because I was able to engage in her viewpoint. Dustin, you're just having a moment over there, man. The Lord's speaking to you. You've got tears, Holy Spirit coming upon that man. I was able to just kind of slide down and I saw from her viewpoint, right, that she literally it was a blind spot for her. She just couldn't see it. She just couldn't see on top of the refrigerator. Huh? You can see? Yeah. And so now it's like, okay, well, it's just, from then on, it's just like, she just can't see it. I'll just do it. It was a total shift because I was able to engage in her viewpoint for that, right? Now, a lot of times we have, for my wife in that situation, it was a physical blind spot, right? She's just shorter than me. She's unable to see up on top of the refrigerator. I can see up on top of the refrigerator. It was just a physical blind spot for her. For for a lot of us, what we have is, I will say, we have personality blind spots. You guys know what I'm talking about? We have blind spots in our personality that we don't see, or that our spouse doesn't necessarily see. And so we have to kind of see how, we have to engage where they are in their personality and then see how the world works, right? The Proverbs say that fools find no pleasure in understanding, but delight in airing their own opinions, right? Fools don't have any pleasure in understanding their spouse's point of view, right? Think about a wise person who understands their spouse's point of view, right? Would that be a healthy marriage? Would that be a solid marriage? Would that be a very helpful thing in marriage, right? So what I want to talk about here for a second is a tool that I've found for my wife and I that we've used over the last 18 months, maybe 2 years or so. Maybe a year, year to 18 months, the Enneagram. This has been a tool that, and I would, this, I'm gonna do a big plug for the Enneagram. Jolynn, you're gonna jump in at any point, okay? Here's the Enneagram. The Enneagram is, it's a personality test. Now, anybody take personality tests before? Myers-Briggs, StrengthsFinder, what else is out there? Anyone, am I missing any? Those are the kind of big ones. Enneagram's similar to that, okay? It's a personality test. where's my? In the Enneagram, you have 9 different personalities. You have a reformer or a perfectionist. You have a helper. Jolynn, which one are you?
I'm 6.
You have a loyalist. You have a questioner? Yeah, more of a loyalist. Rob, what are you?
I'm a 9.
Rob's a peacemaker. Anybody ever do this or hear this? What are you, Molly?
I'm kind of split between a 3 and a 9.
3 and a 9. Okay. And Ronnie, what about you? Have you done it? No?
Okay.
He needs to take the test. This is my big plug for it. Because I will say that this has been the most important, helpful tool in the last year to year and a half of our marriage. To understand. Because my wife has personality blind spots that she doesn't see. Right, and once I was able to kind of like again do this and see from her level, right, and once she's able to kind of do this and see from my level, right, it's helped our marriage tremendously. I'll share about us. We're a number 1 and a number 2. My wife is a reformer or a perfectionist, so she sees the world basically. And you can tell me how, if I'm, she sees the world and how can I improve it? How can I make it better? That's not quite good enough. Let's change it. Let's do this better. Let's perfect it. Is that kind of right? Right? I'm a number 2. I'm a helper, right? So I want to help everybody. I want to just bring, I want to help this person and help that person. When somebody says, if you say to me, hey, Eric, can you help me out? It's as if something in my spirit just comes, like my spirit just gets wings and I'm like, where can I go help the world, right? This is how I see the world, right? So here's how it works for us. When my wife comes to me and she is trying to reform or perfect something, this used to drive me crazy, right? And then I understood that that's just kind of her personality makeup. And I understood that this is who she is, right? It's almost as if I was able to kind of, again, sink down to her viewpoint and say, okay, this is how my wife views the world, that she's just trying to reform it and perfect it. Now, she sometimes sees me trying to help everybody in the world, and this drives her crazy. Why are you helping that person? Eric, you don't need to be out at 9 o'clock changing somebody's oil. You don't need to do this for that person. You don't need to always do this. So when she's able to see this, and she's able to say, hey, you don't always need to do this, right? Or she's able to see my personality and the blind spot of that, right? It's speaking of help, right? It has assisted us in understanding one another, right? Fools take no pleasure in understanding, right? Wise people do take pleasure in understanding, right? And I'm able now to see my wife and her personality and just say, okay, that's who she is. That's her personality. That's kind of part of the way that God has made her, right? And I don't need to fight against that. I don't need to battle that. I want to understand that. Are you with me on that? One other thing about the Enneagram. What will happen is you'll notice that, see these purple and green arrows? You're probably like, is this some sort of a satanic symbol? What's going on here? The purple and green arrows is hard to see down here. The purple arrows will show you kind of where you will move in stress when you're frustrated, when you're anxious. So when I'm anxious, and I noticed this week, it was incredible to see this week, when I'm anxious and when I'm stressed, what I want to do is I want to go get control of the situation. It was kind of a stressful week for me with our kids because Julia was home sick all week, so I had all three kids all day long for 5 days in a row, and I just wanted to control everything, right? I just wanted to be in control. I wanted to tell them what to do. You do this, you do that, and I moved to this kind of control realm, right? When I'm relaxed, when I'm not anxious, when I'm calm, I have this kind of creative side where I'm able to whip up 7-Eleven slides like nobody's business. I have this, speaking to my kids, I can move towards this like kind of being fun and creative and coming up with games and activities and things to do with my children, right? So you have this, these different movements. When my wife is stressed, she'll just kind of maybe move down towards this creative side that just kind of like, oh, whatever, it doesn't matter. Let's just create and have, you know what I mean? And then when she is did I do that right? And when she's in health, she's able to just kind of see the world, the adventurer or the enthusiast just sees the world as one big adventure to be taken on, right? Not something to perfect or reform. Are you with me on this? So this is, when I was in Kansas about a year ago, we did some sessions on this, just understanding the Enneagram, understanding ourselves. Am I missing anything, Jolynn? What's that? You're not going to perfect my sermon?
One thing is you shouldn't tell people what they are.
Exactly.
That was, Eric still tells me. Well, and now I know I'm a number one. I took the test. But he would always say, and he still.
He's just helping.
But you still don't need to say, stop being a number one.
Yeah.
Yes, I know. And we're working on that.
That's when he becomes a number eight.
This is the shadow when I tell my wife that she's a number one. Stop being a number one. Stop trying to... Okay, now what I want to do here is this, and I'll send this link out via email. This is the test that you can go on and take. eclecticenergies.com/Enneagram/test. When I send out the email this week, I'll put that link at the bottom of the email. But if you want to go on and take that test, what's that? If you want to go on and take that test and engage that test to find out your personality, have your spouse do it as well. Again, I cannot think of a more helpful tool for my wife and I to understand one another over the past year to 18 months than this test, right? It's been so helpful. Jolynn, would you say?
Yeah, and I have adult children, obviously, so they all took it too.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of wish I had some of the insight.
Yeah.
When they were a little younger, but
we took it from a different spot.
Yeah, we did the Ready.
No, it was the Enneagram Institute.
Right, which is, yeah.
Okay.
Text that to me and I'll include both.
That one this is cost money.
Oh, the Ready one does?
Yeah.
But okay. It had like a full on, like, I don't know what the outcome is of that one, but it had like very, 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 very thorough, like,
okay.
Printout afterwards. Okay. So you wouldn't necessarily have to buy a book right away.
Okay. Yeah. And I have a lot of papers, and like, again, I took a whole couple sessions on this with my friend Jan when I was in Kansas about a year ago, and we learned a lot about this Enneagram. If you'll notice too, one of the things I changed this week is I'm not using the toolbox anymore. I'm going to use this first aid kit. We had this moment, like, Mark, we were talking about this on a Monday morning at Men's Bible Study. We talked about how men just want to fix things. So I thought about my, like, oh, well, here's your toolbox. And if your marriage is broken, here's the perfect tool to go fix it. It was such a man thing for me to do, to have a toolbox. I was like, here's the tool to fix your marriage. So in lieu of the toolbox is no more. The first aid kit, I don't know if it's any better, but again, I just wanted to put a little icon up there for you to, anytime you see that, it's something, again, that can help your marriage this week, it can help your marriage this month, it can help your marriage this year. I would say go take this test, and then I would say discuss it, read a little bit about it, discuss it with your spouse, understand your spouse. So that's what I would say about that. Okay. Let me say one last thing about conflict. See, I told you it's like 10:55 and I'm only done with the first C. Let me say one last thing about conflict. Keller points out in his book, and he quotes this study. They did this study, all these folks up here, I won't name them all, But they did this study of, does divorce make people happy? Findings from a study of unhappy marriages, right? And this, you can't see it, but it's this husband and his wife's behind him rubbing his shoulders, and she says, "Sweetheart, I don't want anyone to make you unhappy but me, except me." And so they have this whole study that they do in which they talk about divorce, and they say, Keller points out this in his book, and he quotes this study. He says that longitudinal studies reveal that 2/3 of unhappy, or just think about marriages in conflict, right, heavy conflict, will become happy within 5 years if people stay married and don't get divorced. And then I love how he adds that at the bottom, 2/3 with the exclamation point, right? So sometimes we are in heavy periods of conflict, and to know that if you continue to work at it, if a person's convinced of, like, I'm going to work on this thing, I'm going to keep going, that what this study, again, shows is that 2/3, like, that is good odds, right? Tell me, Matt, you wouldn't go to Vegas with 2/3 odds, right? Those are good odds, that marriage, your marriage will become happy, fulfilling, satisfied if you just keep going, if you don't give up, all right? Okay. Conflict. You keep the issue, right? Don't battle in the shadows. Don't go back here. Don't put the relationship, don't put their reputation on the line. Initiate movement towards their position. Do the interior work, the judgmental, the critical spirit that often happens when we're in conflict. Engage in their viewpoint. See what are they trying to see? What is their point of this? And have some conversations. I'm going to do one more C. I think we can talk about communication, and we'll call it a day. Communication. Typically, at the root of conflict is people who kind of cross their wires, right? It's somebody has meant to say something, and the wires just get crossed. Let's use a toilet paper roll. You're probably right that your spouse should replace this, right? They should be considerate and thoughtful and replace it. But what happens is you want to tell them, and then your words just so they fall just so tragically short. Right. Instead of like, honey, can we talk about, you know what I mean? And there's this broken communication that happens where you want to express your feelings to them, but it ends up frustrated or angry or indifferent. And you end up hurting and harming and distancing yourself from that person. One of the things that I've learned with communication, this is something that I've been trying to work on a little bit more with a lot of people. This is good for spouses, families, whatever, is that you interpret the words through the person, not the person through the words. So this is like a little bit of hard candy. You gotta kind of put this one, you gotta think about this one for a little bit. All right. You interpret the words through the person and not the person through the words. Anybody wanna take a crack at that little or think of an example? So, sorry, honey, this isn't like. Say this is me and I forget it, right? And I, or the dresser drawer or whatever, right? When my wife comes to me and she might have a hard or a critical or a reforming or a perfectionist, word towards me, right? I don't want to interpret her words, right? I don't want to interpret her as when she has something hard and critical to say to me, well, she's just critical. She's just judgmental. She's just angry. She's just frustrated. I want to see my wife and say, look, I've been married to my wife for 12 years. My wife loves me. My wife cares about me. My wife is kind. She's compassionate. She doesn't get angry easily. Right? I want to understand that is the character and the nature of my wife. And then I want to understand her words through who I know my wife to be. Do you see how we flip this? Right? Do you see how the shadows happen when the shadows happen? Right? Is we flip this. This is who my wife, this is who the toilet paper non-replacer becomes. Right? We interpret the toilet paper person through all these. Well, now they're, this is who they are, right? I don't think that works. Let me say that different. With the toilet paper, instead we would interpret the person who doesn't, when my wife has this hard word towards me, again, now she's critical and she's angry and she's frustrated. Is this working? You guys know what I'm talking about here? You have to begin, when somebody is communicating, think about who they are, right? And then understand their words through who they are, right? Oftentimes we do the opposite, and we have these words that come towards us, and now we're just like thinking, well, this is just who my wife or my spouse is, right? The Proverbs say that people's thoughts, right, or people's words, or they can be like a deep well, right? But someone with understanding can find wisdom there. So you have to be able to look at who you've known your spouse to be over the years. And again, for the most part, I have yet to do a wedding where people say, oh, this is who my spouse is. Undisciplined, lazy, inconsiderate, selfish, oblivious, critical, angry, always frustrated, right? You have to understand who your spouse is, right? And there is something in there that they have to tell you, that they want to say to you. And it's, again, it's like a deep well. But what's at the bottom of a deep well? Cool, fresh water. And that's wisdom that they want to share and speak to you. And this is both spouses coming together and say, okay, I know that there were some harsh words said there. I know that there were some frustrated, some angry words said there. But I don't want to interpret, I don't want to make my wife or husband, that's who they are. I want to know that my wife, my spouse is loving, kind, considerate, and I want to hear the words behind that. The second thing I would say is, so we need to learn to be able to speak the truth in love, right? This is a really hard thing. I don't know if I perfected this, so if anybody's got some thoughts on this too, I'd love to hear. Paul in Ephesians says, instead we will speak the truth in love, growing in every way more and more like Christ, who is the head of his body, the church. When he talks about what love does, the way that love operates, the way that love is actions, he says that love rejoices in the truth, right? We typically make two errors when we speak the truth in love, or when we're speaking, right? Often, we could say that truth without love is harsh. Anybody know somebody who's just, well, I just tell it like it is, right? And anytime, they're like a cactus, because anytime you get close to them, it's like they always got this word that they're just going to tell you how it is, right? Oh, this is just how it is, and I'm just a truth teller. And I am the, there's this one comedian, he says, I am the czar of truth, and I will, you know, and you're just floating around lost, and I'll show you the way, right? And we know people who just speak truth without love. It's harsh. It's difficult. You can't hear these words, right? Truth, or love without truth is just sentimental. It's mushy. One of the synonyms was it's syrupy. It's sticky and it's sweet and it doesn't last. It leaves a mess, right? It's okay. It's not really a big deal. I'm not frustrated. It's okay. You know what I mean? And you know people who just, yeah, they're really loving and they're kind and they're considerate, but they never really speak the truth. This is something that we learn, to be able to speak the truth with love. And I would say that truth and love is gracious, right? Gracious. Proverbs says that gracious words are a honeycomb, sweet to the soul and healing to the bones. I had meant to, has anybody tried, does anybody know what this is down here?
Oh, why didn't we go get some?
I was at Sprouts on Friday night. I will bring some next week because I meant for us to have this moment together where we would engage in the chocolate covered honeycomb. Who's had it?
Never had it.
Cat, it's good, right? That's what a loving, truthful word is. A gracious word is fulfilling and it's satisfying. And the chocolate-covered honeycomb is a little bit difficult to eat, but it is so, so good. And this is what it is we need to hear those words. I don't want my spouse just to tell me all the time, it's okay, honey, it's not really a big deal. I love you. It's not, you know, no problem, right? And I don't want her to be at the same time, well, I'm just going to tell you like it is, and here's how it is, and you need to do this, and you need to do that. I want her to speak the truth in love to me. I need those gracious words. We need that from our spouse. We need to learn how to receive those words, and we need to learn how to speak those words, right? Let me give you one. We'll go back to the, not the toolbox, so the first aid kit. Last one, then we'll be done. This is something that this is something I've been thinking about lately, for even just for myself. I want to encourage folks in this room to build up your spouse's reputation in front of others rather than diminish it. So what I've noticed with myself, and my wife will help keep me accountable on this, what I've noticed in myself is sometimes you got that little joke, sometimes you got that little jab, sometimes you just got that little inside funny, right? And you might be in a group of people and you're out to dinner, and you just got that little joke or jab. And what happens is you say it and everybody laughs, right? But you know that what happened is you just took a little dig at your spouse, right? And I put right below, I put it's a bad profit. Because you profit in the short term, right? Everybody laughs and you kind of feel good. Like, oh yeah, I made everybody laugh, right? But in the long term, what happens? You diminish your spouse's reputation, right? So one of the things that I've been challenging myself, and I've been noticing this too, because if you begin to work on this and you begin to notice it in folks, you know what I mean? And what I want to do and what I'd want to challenge our church to do is to be the kind of people that would build up your spouse's reputation, specifically publicly in front of others, right? How good would it be if you're out to dinner, you're engaged in some sort of a activity, or you're at a wedding or whatever, and your spouse in front of people begins to speak good of you? Man, my wife, she teaches, and she's seriously such an incredible math teacher. She has 180-something students, and that's a lot to balance and a lot to juggle. And she does a remarkable job at that. And then she comes home and she's got energy to be with our girls. I'm amazed at how my wife can do that, right? Or I can say, you know, my wife, she's just a child shuffler. She just doesn't really do work at all during the day. They just kind of move kids from one classroom to the other. They never really do work. They just kind of, you know, they're just kind of sitting in the teacher's lounge eating donuts. And who's got the kids now? Or they're at recess. Or who's doing now? Their music, you know what I mean? So you have these two things. Now, look, I know which one I get a laugh at and which one makes me feel better, right? But it's bad profit, right? It's a short-term gain, but a long-term loss. I was reading a blog about this, and a guy said that he was going to this church. I was so convicted by this. He said he was going to this church. This guy's writing a blog. He says, I'm going to this church, and I got to meet the pastor and his wife. And he said they would always dig at each other, right? They'd always have this joke or this jab towards one another. And it was, like, this one was awkward. And he said, and eventually their marriage just fizzled, and it just burned out, right? And I was thinking about that, because I'm like, oh, that's me. I'm a young pastor, and I like to, you know, kind of, I do this. I just take jokes and jabs, and I know this. And I was so convicted by this, but I hope that this is something that you can use, because, again, long-term, you build up your spouse's reputation in front of other people. What does that say to your spouse? Right? What does that say about the way that you view your spouse? And you begin to think, now you begin to think, you literally are reprogramming your brain to think of your spouse not as just a child shuffler, right? Not as just this or that, but you begin to reprogram your brain to think, wow, my spouse really is a hard worker, right? My spouse really is a phenomenal mother. And you begin to reprogram your mind, and it just is something that will build a longer, lasting marriage. With me on that? It's a good one, right? Something good. I think that hit home for me. I hope that hits home for a lot of us. I'm halfway home, and it's like 11:10. I think we're going to starve. So next week, then, we'll just come back, and we'll just pick up. I want to talk about choices. There's certain choices that I think you can make in your marriage that are just really helpful. And again, we talked about last week, this. It's not just going to happen. You're not just going to luck into a happy marriage. You're going to have to make it. And so you're going to have to make certain choices in your marriage there'll be discipline choices, right? And then the last, I'll talk about change. We never think about how much our spouse changes, right? Think about how much C.S. Lewis, we'll get back to this next week, but C.S. Lewis says that He says, isn't it funny how day by day nothing changes, but when you look back, everything's different, right? And so we, you know, oftentimes with our spouse, we don't notice. We just see our spouse and nothing changes, but we have to kind of step back a little bit and see how much things have changed and then appreciate that or acknowledge that or kind of talk about that. So next week we'll talk about choices and change. I have one more C week that I think I want to do. I want to talk about sex in marriage, which I think is a big piece. Julia, close your ears for a second. and it's the consummation or coitus, whichever word you feel more comfortable using. So it's this whole alliteration on C's. I spent years in, but I want to talk about sex and marriage because I think that that's a big piece, and it's a lot of stress and anxiety and frustration and conflict happen with sex. And so I think I'm going to get back to that in March. We'll play it by ear. But next week we'll talk about choices. We'll talk about change. Cool. Is that good? Let's take a few minutes and have some discussion time. I think I'll have to adjust this a little bit. The three rules of conflict: keep the issue, or move towards that person, or engage in their viewpoint. Which of these do you think you could work on, or which maybe was helpful to you? How does understanding your spouse's personality, how would that strengthen your marriage? Right? Can you share of a time when you spoke the truth in love and it was sweet and healing? Can you think about that time? Maybe you've had that conflict and you were able to speak that. And then that last one is obviously the choices we'll talk about next week. There are gratitude, optimism, avoiding comparison, love language, seeking the Lord. Do you want to emphasize? But what we'll change that last one too is maybe you want to just spend a minute or two talking about that, building up your spouse's reputation in public or diminishing it. Maybe you have a story you can share about that or talk a little bit about that. Does that make sense? So let's just take 5 minutes or so and discuss that, and then we'll have some group discussion.